I am tired. And I had a wonderful week last week of rest and recovery. Darren stepped in, did, of course, a wonderful job. I missed being here, as always, but I needed the break, you know. But to come back from a week off and have the first words out of my mouth be, "I'm tired," that's not good, is it? But that's not it, because I'm also just plain worn down. I am struggling. And here's the big one. I am even feeling uninspired. Struggling to find something to say. It's not because there isn't anything to say. There's plenty to say, but this week, as I was coming back and just thinking and preparing, I got this video. I received a video from Cliff and Heather Shalomis in New Zealand, which right there, that should be enough to be inspiring, right? They sent me a video that had been circulating, or some friends may have sent it to them, and they asked me for feedback on it. And you know, I watched it, and I just felt such an unbelievably immense weight just settle on my back. They sent the video in response to my request the last time I taught that if you come across anti-Semitic things online, send them to us. You know, let us review them. We'll respond. We'll stand, right? It's about an hour and a half video. I'm going to be honest with you. I did not watch all of it. And what I did watch, I watched on 2x, two times speed, of a guy sharing the truth. And there it is. The truth, he said, that many would disagree with. Many will hear this and see it, and they will say, this is racist, or this is biased, or this is hate-filled. But it was the truth, he said, about an hour and a half of conspiracy theories about the Jews, about how Jews, you know, are not really Jews, how Moses, Abraham wasn't a Jew, and Moses isn't a Jew, and all of this corruption that's gone on, and how all the brain power behind communism, guess who that was? Jews. The entire video, and I'm not going to go into it. I'm certain if I had watched the whole thing, the entire video rests on changing definitions, cherry-picking antiquated quotes, ignoring a mountain of genetic and historic evidence about the Jewish people, and forcing scripture to be run through a pre-decided replacement grid. That's what the video was. But it actually wasn't the video. It was the comments, which represent real people in the world the way that they feel when they watch these things. Listen, 1.1 million views, 20,000 comments. Let me give you a sampling. It makes me so happy more Christians are waking up to how we've been manipulated. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Wow, I have no words for my gratitude to you. I've never heard or seen anything like this. May God bless and protect you. The publisher recently responded in the comments as well. And here's what he wrote. Listen, at the beginning of December 2023, my channel had about 900 subscribers. It wasn't even monetized. Well, today, a year and a half later, my channel has over 36,000 subscribers and many more in many other places. A lot of you have come because you saw my documentary, Why the Jews Are Not God's Chosen People. And it really resonated. It impacted your life. To say I'm grateful to God for all the work he's done, not only through this project, but in general in my life in countless ways, is a gross understatement. I never planned on doing what I do today, yet here we are and we will go on so long as the Lord wills. The fact that this video has done what it's done and survived on YouTube is to me an act of God, he says. And that was the point at which I realized, man, I'm tired. I take it seriously to try to combat this stuff with facts, to give messages, to inspire people to stand up, and you do. As I said a minute ago, it's not that there's nothing to say that left me feeling uninspired. It's that there's so much to say. But in 2025, after thousands of years, after a Holocaust, one of the commenters wrote, they weren't kicked out of 109 countries over 1,000 times for no reason. There's so much to say, but I can't believe it has to be said. Seriously, the fact that a video about how Jews are liars and the Holocaust is a fabrication garners a million views, and people ask God's blessing upon its creator, quoting the Aaronic benediction to bless his work of God. What is this, man? When I was young, listen, I just expected it. People don't like Jews. I get it. I laughed at all my friends' Jewish jokes. I get it. I could brush it off maybe. But as I've gotten older and I try to combat it, to understand it, I'm just speechless. What is the point of saying anything, it seems? But then Hashem kicked me in the rear end. And he does that sometimes. And it clicked. The kick clicked. I do understand it. I understand it. I know where it comes from. Most people don't because they don't want to know, or they don't want to admit it, or they've never been shown. But I don't have the luxury of giving up or being tired or complaining. And here's where the point at which I moved because of this kick in the rear end, from tired to inspired. And here's what Aish said and what I came to really see. The pattern is clear. Anti-Semitic lies don't need to be true, they just need to sound good. Rationality has never been enough to stop the hate, and there's the all-important word, hate. Because that's what it's really about. Not facts, not evidence, not truth. It's about hate that has been dressed up in religious language. It is about hate that's been given this theological costume. It's about hate that's been wrapped up in Scripture and tied up with a little bow of biblical truth. And when hate gets dressed up like that, it becomes incredibly dangerous because now it's not just hate, it's not just prejudice, it's God's will. It's not just racism, it's revelation. It's biblical revelation. It's the truth. The truth you've been seeking, they tell you. There it is. But here's the good news. And for those of you that are fearful that this is going to be another message about anti-Semitism, fear not. For those who might be thinking, why do we need this? He's preaching to the choir. Bingo. You are the choir. I need to teach you. I need you to understand this. At least on a basic level, if you are so inspired, you can pursue many, many more avenues to continue your education and learn, but I need to focus on you. Here's what I will not do ever anymore, really. I hope not. I'll try to remember that I'm saying this. I will not focus on the haters. Okay? What do I mean by that? Let a hater hate. What do I mean by that? I'm sorry, that's in my subconscious somewhere. I'm not going to expect that we're going to change their minds. And I know recently I did focus on some particular people and some particular things, and I pointed that out. But these people, man, they are sold out. They are sold out or bought in, whichever way you want to do it. The proverbial deal with the devil. They are sold out, these famous people, to their money-making agenda. Funny, that's usually reserved for the Jews. Their followers, their fans, their popularity, their influential voice, their power, even though it's fueled by hatred. But you know what? As my dear friend Mac Goddard and mentor, may his memory be for a blessing, has told me, and I've told you many, many times, guess what? I'm going to let that be their problem. Actually, I'm updating that. I'm going to let them be God's problem. I'm going to let them be God's problem. I'm going to let God sort that out. And we can do our part by praying for our enemies. And make no mistake, Candace and Tucker and their ilk, they are our enemies. But we're going to handle that Jesus style. We're going to pray for our enemies, which may give you pause, and you might say, "Oh, Rabbi, just 2 weeks ago, you gave us these messages about being strong and separating yourself and being courageous and standing up for what's right, and you even built this acronym around the word stand that we're supposed to resist. Now we're just supposed to pray for them?" Hold on, let me clarify. Here's the conversation I had with God. I'm sharing with you about being tired and uninspired and really just pretty much angry. And this is what I heard, not audibly, of course, but over much wrestling. It does absolutely no good to make people sour. You must give them power. You have to empower people. What is power? Knowledge is power. It's not getting down in the mud. It's not wrestling with the pigs in the sty and throwing filth around. It's to be empowered, to empower people. So I hear, teach them. Okay, I get it. I know. But what? Teach them what, God? The roots. The roots? The Jewish roots? I've been doing that for almost 20 years. Everybody here knows the Jewish roots. Healthy roots, healthy tree, yeah. No, not those roots. Because weeds have roots too. And they nourish ugly and destructive things that grow in the garden. And sometimes very, very deep roots. And if you really want to get to, if you want the thing to die, you got to get to the roots. You got to pull it up by the roots. You got to poison the roots. You've got to introduce people to the roots of this stuff. And I was reminded of a quote from John Chrysostom. You know John Chrysostom? You know what that means? Fourth century church father. Chrysostom means golden mouth. But he knew about roots as well. Here's what he wrote. "I know that many people hold a high regard for the Jew and consider their way of life worthy of respect at the present time. This is why I am hurrying to pull up the fatal notion by the roots." And then he's summarizing the next thing. "The synagogue's a whorehouse. Jews have been marked for slaughter." That's what he goes on to say. He's getting to the root of it. But that's the answer I needed to wake up and stop feeling sorry for myself and commit to something that, even though I know it will be, uncomfortable. Uncomfortable for me because of some of the things that we have to face and confront. But it's got to be done. And it's for you, the choir. On the count of three. So that you can do what I told you to do. To stand, to be heard, to not back down. Not just to give you the headlines and the loud mouth and the shock value and the celebrity Jew hater comments, but to empower you. To empower you to be people who really matter, to be educated and equipped, armed with knowledge for the people that matter, your friends, your family, your coworkers, and anyone that God puts in your path that you can simply say, no, that's not true. That's a lie. And here's why. Because I can tell you all I can tell you, you need to do it. You need to stand. But if I don't give you the tools, if I don't empower you, I can do that all day long. What difference does it make? So we're starting a new series, which is called Baseless Hatred, The Roots of Christian Antisemitism. And what makes these things so difficult to stand against is that they were not born in a vacuum, these insults and things that built against the Jewish people. They didn't happen overnight. And we can trace antisemitism through the church fathers, through the Crusades, through the Reformation, but we need to go deeper than that. We need to go to the root of it. And that, folks, is the difficult part because it's from the Bible itself. Specifically, the way the New Testament has been misused. Not the text itself, but how it has been weaponized through two critical misinterpretations. First of all, reading the Gospels and letters in isolation from their true context, which is an intra-family dispute within Judaism. That's the first error. This was a crucial period when traditional and Jesus-following Jews were wrestling, perhaps through the most tumultuous time in history. The New Testament is often read anachronistically, backwards, out of order, as if it's a book written by the church for the church. That's not what it is. There was a body, there was an ecclesia of Jews, and yes, by the time the Gospels were written down, of Gentiles as well. But to overlay the parting of the ways that occurred over the next couple of centuries past the Gospel, to overlay that onto the New Testament is absolutely incorrect, and it leads to false conclusions, grievous interpretive errors with centuries of consequence. This was an intra-family dispute. Secondly, critical misinterpretation comes from something that affects every modern reader just about, which is our distance from the historical context. To understand the New Testament, you need to grasp three historical realities, actually many more, but at least three. I just mentioned one. The Jewish world was in crisis. The temple's destruction, we just talked about it, it changed everything. On all sides, Rome's oppressive presence also shaped every aspect of life. Why do you think the New Testament speaks of Rome in code? The Jesus movement was evolving very rapidly, especially as it related to Gentiles. All of this history. Without it, readers misunderstand why certain terms were used, the Jews in the book of John. What heresies were actually being battled by some of these letters and these writers. How timing of the Gospels, when they were written, by who. All of this affected the language and the focus of each text, understanding phrases like the synagogue of Satan in its context. There are layers, layers upon layers to the events. Cultural, historical complexities. They inform the why of things were written, of why things were written, why the New Testament even came to be. Do you know that? Well, because of God, there's more to it than that, actually. And we should know these things because they're at the root of some of the problems that we face. And these are things that most people have no clue about, and we should know them. Not just because you attend a Messianic synagogue, not just because you have Jewish friends, not just because you hate anti-Semitism, but because knowing these things helps you read and understand the words that talk about the story of Messiah and redemption. You understand it more. We need that. Knowledge in so many ways is power, in the flesh and the spirit and the natural and the supernatural. But I realize that I am walking a fine, fine line, maybe a very dangerous line by the traditionalists' assessment. As I introduce this, before we examine these ideas in text, I want to be very crystal clear about our approach. I am obviously not here to discredit the New Testament, and we're going to use that familiar terminology, though Gospels and Apostolic writings would be much more appropriate. Even the term New Testament reeks of replacement theology, but we're going to use it anyway. It's familiar. People know it. What we're seeking is to see these texts as they truly are and understand then how they've been misunderstood. To see them as a record of a transformative movement, a holy endeavor written by passionate Jewish disciples who were wrestling with real conflicts in real time. It is an imperfect world of human beings writing and sharing this holy endeavor. And that doesn't weaken the texts. It actually brings them to life. It helps you understand the human drama behind the divine message, because there was one. There is one. It reveals why we have these words and certain arguments are being made, and it shows us, again, how they've been misapplied. Let me show you exactly what I mean with a perfect example from Paul's letters. In 1 Thessalonians, which was the earliest book of Paul's letter, Paul writes something that anti-Semites have weaponized for centuries. Here's what he writes. They are not pleasing to God and hostile to all people, hindering us from speaking to the Gentiles so that they might be saved. As a result, they constantly fill up the measure of their sins, but wrath has come upon them at last. That's Paul. 1 Thessalonians. The passage perfectly demonstrates both types of misinterpretation that I mentioned to you. First, the family dispute context. These were not words written by a Christian. Written by a Christian against Jews. This was Paul, a Jew, in an internal family dispute with other Jews. Like harsh words spoken at a family fight. They have passionate disagreement within a community, but not really hatred coming from outside of it. My goodness, listen to me. If every foul or disrespectful or discourteous word I ever said to my parents when I was mad at them, when I was a passionate teenager, if that were documented and then that was supposed to be evidence of how I actually feel about my parents, that's not me. But in that moment, it certainly was. We say things, sadly, to our family of all people that we just wouldn't say to other people. But also the historical context. This is written by Paul during this intense period of, what do we do with the Gentiles? This is my mission to the Gentiles. We got to do this. Paul was facing active opposition from specific people in specific places. But within 10 years, as the movement spread to the Gentiles. Paul saw how his words could be misused, were being misused. And he wrote another very famous epistle called Romans. This is why Romans, written later, Paul explicitly warns Gentile believers against feeling superior to Israel. Paul moved from these heated local arguments to this profound theological statement about Israel's permanence in God's plan. Paul is a human being. We cannot remove his emotion from his letters. We should not remove him. But in the thick of controversy, in an intra-family dispute with his Jewish brothers and sisters that he was laboring so hard to help them see the truth of Messiah, they continued to reject, and his anger and his passion comes forth in that statement in 1 Thessalonians. But those who weaponize that text conveniently forget to read Romans, his magnum opus. And the more developed theology that Paul had created by Romans 9 through 11. They cherry-picked the heated words from a family argument and completely disregard that systematic teaching about Israel's precious place in God's plan. So what was once an internal argument between Jews about the Messiah became later a weapon, weaponized against Jews everywhere, everywhere. But only by willfully ignoring half of the story. Think about this. If Paul himself saw the need to clarify his words within just a decade, imagine how much more careful we should be 2,000 years later. This is why understanding these two types of context, this is not an academic teaching. It's going to be a teaching. It's going to be deep and intense. But it's essential. It's essential for preventing the kind of misuse that is everywhere feeding anti-Semitism. Millennia of misrepresentations overlaid onto the text. Is it any surprise that anti-Semitism still has these weeds growing deep that produce these hideous, hideous, unhealthy things in the garden of the people of God? This will not be a sob story. I will not inundate you with vitriolic statements of anti-Semites through the ages or provide example after example of the mistreatment of the Jewish people. Sad to say, but we know these things. Sad to say, we're familiar with them. And I don't want to miss the real purpose of our message, which is to, as I said, empower with knowledge. But with that said, we will at times come face to face with the horrors of history against the Jewish people, based on misunderstanding, misapplication, and hatred. So my goal over the next, I don't know how many weeks, is to empower you, not to sour you, but to empower you. We're going to arm ourselves for very real spiritual battles, one that has been going on for thousands of years. And I know it's heavy material, but guess what? This is, 'tis the season to be heavy, fa-la-la-la-la. This is the long, dry, heavy summer of Jewish history that starts tomorrow with the 17th of Tammuz. The destruction of the first and second temples and Jewish tragedies throughout history that occurred within this period of time. This is actually the time to be heavy. But what's interesting about this time and its connection to our series before us is this. Much of Christianity, I will never say all, there is no such thing. Well, there is one thing. Christians believe in Jesus. That's a universal. But there's no monolithic Christianity. Much of Christianity has seen and continues to see the destruction of the temple as God's judgment on the Jewish people because they did not accept Jesus. That God was stamping out Judaism, implementing a new system. The Jews got what they deserved, and that's the foundation of replacement theology. But guess what? Here's the twist. The Pharisees would actually agree with that, at least one part, that the destruction of the temple was God's judgment on Israel. Not for their Judaism, not for their sacrifices, not for their connection and love and observance of the Torah, not even for their dismissal of Messiah Yeshua. Rather, for the practice of sinat chinam, baseless hatred. 40 years prior, this is the message that Yeshua was bringing to Israel. Love God, and for God's sake, please love each other. Remove the baseless hatred from our people, he was saying. Repent, for the kingdom is imminent. But baseless hatred destroyed, and it still is destroying. So, my friends, we're still in mourning for the fact that we have not overcome the dark pull of baseless hatred. It's rising and rising and rising with such force around us. So, it's the word. I want to empower you with tools of knowledge to combat the spirit of hate. May God grant us this ability through His wisdom and His Spirit. Shabbat Shalom.
I'm Darren with Shalom Macon. If you enjoyed this teaching, I want to ask you to take the next step. Start by making sure you're subscribed to our channel. Next, make sure you hit the like button on this video so that others know it's worth their time to watch. Last, head over to our website to learn more about Shalom Macon, explore other teachings and events, and if you're so inclined, contribute to the work that we're doing to further the kingdom. Thanks for watching and connecting with Shalom Macon.